This programme was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with a television licence fee. Welcome to the second episode of In the Old Floods Time. I'm Marisha Kelly. Today, I examine some of the key events in Irish agriculture which have led to significant changes in records, the food chain and movement regulations. I meet with veterinarian Gerry Crowley, former IFA President John Bryan, Tagus Regional Manager Gerard McMahon and Cork Mart's representative Robert Collender. One of the major incidents to rock Ireland was when we experienced our first foot-and-mouth outbreak in 60 years. In 2001, for 3 months, the entire country, not least the farming community, held its breath while we fearfully watched the course of the outbreak of the disease in the UK. However, in March, the foot-and-mouth hurricane was here, and Ireland was in the eye of the storm. But first, let's find out from Gerry Crowley what exactly the disease is.
Foot and mouth basically is a very contagious disease of any cloven footed animal. It's highly contagious, and it'll spread rapidly within the animal population. It's not really a significant threat to human health, but one of the big problems with the disease is that animals are actually shedding the virus for a long time before they become clinically ill, so that you actually know that they're sick. So that makes the dispersal of the disease among the animals and the spread of the disease among the animals. It happens more quickly, so it's harder to detect. And the earlier you detect, obviously, the earlier you can put in place measures to try and control the spread. That's why you have such restrictions on travel, restrictions on people coming and going from farm holdings where there might be a suspicious case. We were lucky. We didn't actually have any suspicious case in our practice in 2001. But, you know, if you were to have one, you obviously could not go from one farm to another. You'd have to report it and stay on the farm, you know, until you'd get instruction from the Department of Agriculture as what steps to take.
The culling of thousands of sheep and cattle has begun following confirmation of the Republic of Ireland's outbreak of foot and mouth disease at a farm in County Louth. The slaughter of 3,000 sheep and up to 1,000 cattle in a 1 kilometre radius of the farm was announced by Minister Joe Walsh.
And even though we're now 13 years on from the outbreak, the images are still very clear, as John Bryan remembers.
Probably foot and mouth is one of the things that people have a huge dread of, and a generation that saw it in the past when England was totally closed down, and people remember, and even back in 2001 when we think of the television images at the time of burning thousands of cattle in England, it's kind of a horror story for farmers to think that they earn their living, they try and invest, build up a farm over generations, and at one click this bug comes in on your farm and everything is destroyed. And I met some Scottish farmers that got foot and mouth, and when you hear the descriptions that they'd have of when the veterinary people come in, test the cattle, you're having the nightmare with the farm locked down the same as if it was criminals that they locked down the whole area, and then shooting all the stock and then burning them all. It's a horrible image now. Now, I have never been on a farm where it happened, but for the people who were, and I had a good friend, he's president of NFU Scotland now at the moment, Nigel Miller, and he was a vet working for the Department of Agriculture in Scotland during that whole escapade. And he said, to go into farmers, he said, to the shock when you deliver the message to them, your herd is going to be taken out and that. So people dreaded the whole implications of it. And then for Ireland as a trading country, we're here, 4 million people. We have a huge bovine population, both beef cows, dairy cows, stock. So exports of beef are very important there. And once foot and mouth hits, you're locked out of a whole load of markets. So Ireland is regarded as one of the countries that's free from foot and mouth. So it gives us the right to trade in a lot of countries. It would have huge implications for our trade and the whole business, but at individual farm level, the damage that can be done is huge. And when I think back, as you reminded me, that was 2001, just almost if it was only 5 or 6 years ago instead of 13 years ago, and I remember at the time on the news and the Minister for Agriculture asking people to cooperate and putting straw down at entrances and disinfectants. It was amazing the amount of people in Ireland that put a huge effort into trying to keep it out, because back 50 years ago, there was very little transport between Ireland and other areas. But probably one of the things that would concern me is the huge, huge amount of international travel. There's no day that hundreds and hundreds of people don't go through Dublin Airport that have been everywhere, in Turkey, in Saudi, South America, several countries that have put them out. And our biosecurity in Ireland is very lax compared to places like New Zealand or Australia, where if planes are coming or people from any of those countries, they insist on much more rigorous disinfectant and check your luggage for shoes and things. We certainly, we got a fright in 2001, but our biosecurity since then is not as good as it should be. And it's something I would have mentioned to the Department of Agriculture on a few occasions, that I felt for the value of the agricultural industry here, we certainly don't put enough attention. If you come in on a flight, they read out the message to you telling you that if you visit the farmer, there's no one there to check. There's 90% of the time the Department of Agriculture office in Dublin Airport is not manned. Because I came back only a few months ago from Saudi Arabia, and as usual, when about 30 of us went to check into the Department of Agriculture, nobody there. You know, which is very lax for a country where agriculture is so important, and biosecurity, a small investment there would be well worth doing to prevent any chance, because it will be way too late if it ever does come in here. And there are several countries that foot and mouth is endemic in, and people visiting farms or visiting rural areas could easily carry it in style on their shoes. And certainly you should contrast the Irish level of biosecurity with New Zealand biosecurity. A little increase in the level of biosecurity wouldn't go astray. And one time I drew it up to the department and said, we don't want to be annoying tourists. I don't think tourists wouldn't mind that much. New Zealand has a huge tourist trade, and they have. Certainly, once you tell them you visited a farm, you're in for a good bit of, exactly, disinfecting and spraying.
There'd be power holes going in there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's better. It's always better to err on the side of caution when you think of the implications of what and not.
Stringent controls were put in place by the Department of Agriculture to try to prevent the transmission of the disease from the UK, to limit the extent of the outbreak and to prevent its spread. At the time, sporting events were disrupted, such as the cancellation of Cheltenham Festival. Even St Patrick's Day parades were affected. These measures imposed additional costs on Irish agriculture. However, their greatest knock-on effects were in the tourist and service sectors, mainly in rural areas, as much of the countryside were placed off limits for the three-month period.
Well, all farms had to have disinfectant bats at their entrances and exits, because one of the ways the disease can spread is through people or vehicles. And, you know, people going from one farm to another, their vehicles, the tyres of the vehicles, any materials, the virus could survive on those and be transported from one farm to another inadvertently. And, you know, you're then going to have a situation where it'll spread rapidly.
Tagus Regional Manager Dermot McMahon also recalls the disruption.
During the foot and mouth crisis, I was stationed at the Tagus office in Farnley Road in Cork, and we were confined to our offices for the 3 months of that, where all these shooting sports, that there was no unnecessary entry onto land unless people had to. Notices were set up on March, and the March were closed down, so the only way that you could move cattle was direct to slaughter through permits. And Tagus played a major role in applying the permit system with the Department of Agriculture in that time, with books and books of permits that were issued to people so that they could sell cattle.
Since joining the EU, the control measures and standards of food production and processing have become increasingly rigorous. In 2007, Brazil was established as the main low-cost supplier of beef to international markets, including to Ireland. However, following an IFA Farmers Journal visit to Brazil, evidence was found of non-existent cattle traceability and widespread illegal removal of tags. So I've come to meet with one of the key players in uncovering the shocking story, former IFA President John Bryan, to find out why they went there in the first place.
Cattle prices were under severe pressure because of cheap imports of beef from South America, in particular Brazil. And it was on a spiral curve. What had happened in 2003, 2004, and then in the summer of 2005, the amount of Brazilian beef that hit the European market was huge. And cattle prices actually fell more in a 2 month period, in the April-May period of 2005, than they fell in Europe during the BSE. Purely driven by dumping of Brazilian beef. Brazil had surplus beef and they dumped a huge quantity of it in Europe, but did huge damage. And what would be totally unprecedented, the collapse in cattle prices in that May-June period. Normally there's demand based on warm weather, barbecue. Traditionally you get a pickup because people eat more steak, eat more burgers in the summer months. And instead the price collapsed and it was clear everywhere, in particular in England, was awash with Brazilian beef that the quantities were in. And a lot of the retailers, the major retailers in the UK, were actually displacing Irish beef, displacing UK beef with Brazilian beef, which was coming in. And we had meetings with the European Commission, with the Food and Veterinary Office, saying to them we were very concerned, that we felt that this was unfair competition here in Ireland with traceability from birth to death. We have controlled use of antibiotics, no use of hormones, and huge restrictions for animal welfare and animal environment and in that whole area. And we had a few meetings with the commission and we weren't getting any hop. They were trying to tell us that everything was grand, that was all level playing field. So after putting a lot of pressure on the European Commission and very disappointed with the response, we decided that we'd go out to Brazil in 2006. And in May 2006, Kevin Kinsler, he'd be the director of livestock in IFA. I was the national livestock chairman, and Justin McCarthy was the Farmers Journal. The three of us went out to Brazil and we visited farms in Brazil and we visited Argentina. But certainly when we were in Brazil, it was so different from the picture being put about by the commission. And in 2005 and 2006, there had been outbreaks of foot and mouth in Brazil. And one of the rules in the EU that beef is not, and in particular livestock, movements have to be restricted in areas where there's foot and mouth. So we went out and we actually visited some of the farms that foot and mouth had been on. We had an excellent interpreter, and none of the three spoke Portuguese. But there was free movement of cattle all over the place, and thousands of them. But at a time where we'd be here in Europe, told you can only have transport routes, you can move maybe 8 hours, maybe 200 miles. A lot of the cattle there would be moving 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 miles or kilometres in trucks. They were constantly on the road, moving them maybe from the north to the south in different directions. But the level of movement between the states, according to the EU, they had certain states designated not eligible for the cattle to come to Europe. Which the cattle were moving freely between them from one to the other. And we went back to the European Commission, went out and met the veterinary people in the EU, had a good barony with them in a row, got very little. They said, oh, gosh, you're raving and everything is bright and beautiful out there and they're just as good as us. But between using the Farmers' Journal and using local radio, we piled a good bit of pressure on, got a little bit of traction. And in the autumn of 2006, increased restrictions were put on some Brazilian states and that, and some bit of effort. We went back out the year after. We went in May 2007 again. And we'd learned a good bit the first time. So we got the same interpreter and headed on. We did a lot more farms this time because the first time it was an exercise in learning. And we visited a lot of farms. Did about 40 the second time now.
You know the farmers that you want to visit?
Yeah.
Why do they think you were there?
They thought we were Irish people with loads of money wanting to buy land. This was, you're talking about 2006 and 7. Everyone thought Ireland was awash with money, that once you had a few of the paddies, just all you had to do. As a sceptic said to me afterwards, they were very innocent when they thought four lads stopped into a stretch punto, we're going to have a few million. But look, we visited the farms and an awful lot of the farms' employees were on them, so that was the general. But in different places, it'd be employees and you'd be surprised what they'd show you. That they'd Now, most of the time, we talk to them about different things and we treat us. The amazing thing, best place if you ever want to find that is go around the crush. And around the crush, they have big handling crushes. You find all the, in the place where they were transferring cattle between, tags been cut out and switched, hormones been used, all the things that they denied. We did a video of the second trip now and we presented that to the Agricultural Committee of the European Parliament. When we came back the second time, we made a presentation to the NFU Scotland, to Scottish farmers, and to the veterinary authorities in Scotland, the veterinary authorities in Dublin, and the European Committee. We were piling pressure on all the time, but we had to put a request in, but we got to address the Agricultural Committee of the European Parliament and we presented our DVD to it. We got good, very good support there. A lot of the MEPs were none too impressed with the fact that every country farmers complain about bureaucracy, regulation, the hassle that the European Commission, tagging, traceability, cross compliance. And here were these three lads from Ireland showing a video of beef coming in from Brazil where they had hormones, no tagging, no traceability. So it gave the MEPs a chance to bash the Commission a bit. But enough pressure came on the Commission and the Agricultural Committee voted to support us for further restrictions on Brazil. And the most interesting thing is, in 2003 and 2004, the European Food Safety Authority was happy with Brazil. Major retailers, the Tesco's, the Sainsbury's, Albert Heijn, they were all buying Brazilian beef, calling it equivalent to standards. By 2007, we had highlighted this so much, most of the major retailers in Europe had delisted Brazilian beef. They no longer wanted to be associated with it. So before ever we got the European Commission to act on the ground, Brazil was no longer perceived as an equivalent product. So if you were a top retailer telling you, we give you only the best, no one believed it if they put Brazilian on the shelves. So it started to stick hard. And when we left Brazil the first time, our trip didn't rumble too many feathers in Brazil. But the second time, we got the front page of the main papers in Brazil several times. For the main paper in Brazil, several times they gave out about, in their words, the lies those three Irish lads told about, and the criminal Irish that, but it had the effect. And the Commission in early 2008, for a period, put a ban on Brazilian beef altogether. But where it was heading to a stage that Europe was predicting 1 million tons of Brazilian beef, which would absolutely undermine the European market, it slipped, and the bulk of what's coming into Europe now is manufacturing beef that goes for use in further processing.
But obviously the Irish price then for beef, for Irish beef, went up.
The spring of 2008, the price for Irish beef went up substantially because what happened was European retailers were factoring in Brazilian beef. So they were allowing that they were going to take 10-15% of their product was going to be Brazilian. So suddenly, because the EU told Brazil it had to do something about stopping the movement within state and Brazil did nothing, so then they put a temporary ban in place, a total ban. So if you were a Tesco or you were a Sainsbury or you were an Albert Heijn, that Brazilian beef you were expecting couldn't come. It was stopped because of the ban. So it meant now you had to pick up the phone and you had to buy it in Scotland or Germany or Ireland. So prices went up substantially in the spring of 2008. But unfortunately, one of the flaws for Irish farmers is beef prices tend to go up a bit slowly and then collapse and up a bit. And the same over the last number of years because of increased consumption across the world, but it's creating more demand. So over the last number of years, there's been a steady rise in beef prices.
But as a result then of your trip to Brazil, the European beef price then overall did it increase?
Or it did, overall it increased, but more than anything, it stabilised. And every year that the Brazilian beef tonnage was to rise, if that had to continue for another couple of years, it would have totally collapsed the European beef market. Because we have much higher costs. The costs in Europe are so high. At the moment, a lot of beef farmers are not breaking even. But if you were competing with 1 million tons of Brazilian beef on the European market, you could take it for granted the price would be 25 or 30% lower. In most cases, there wouldn't be a ghost that the farmer could produce. So it would have resulted in a collapse in the European beef herd.
Will you ever go back to Brazil?
I don't know now. It's a country I liked, actually. I'd like to see it, but I'd have to be conscious of the fact that I did an item a lot now.
You'd have to go back on holidays in disguise.
Yeah, exactly. It is a nice country now.
To look at the beef situation from a different angle, I've come to Cork Marts to speak with Robert Collender to see the changes he has noticed in the beef trade since 2007.
Yeah, the campaign that was launched by the IFA and the Farmers Journal and others that went out to Brazil and they uncovered a lot of irregularities out there. Well, it meant that everyone now has to play on the same level playing field. It doesn't give any, I don't know, would you call it unfair? I presume all is fair in love and war, I suppose. To be able to get an advantage in trade, yeah. I presume in them countries it was always deemed to be fair if you could get an advantage and you can trade out your cattle. Yeah, it was a very, very positive effect and has been up until the bull beef crisis nowadays in the spring of 14.
And did you see beef prices soar in Ireland after 2007?
Beef prices did, and they hit a high last year. That was in 13. Even for cow beef and things like that, it was probably the highest that it had been in years. But up till that, yeah, cattle prices were good. Store prices were not too bad. It was helped a good bit, though, by the shipping of the freezing calves onto the continent, which made cattle that bit scarcer. So it was good and it looked well. And they're talking now about Harvest 2020. Now, I don't know, for a beef farmer, it doesn't look very positive now. That's the way things are looking now, and hopefully the dairy won't go the same way when we get the expansion after 2015.
That was 2007, but the very next year, the agricultural industry was shook yet again with the Irish pork crisis of 2008.
The Food Safety Authority of Ireland has ordered the withdrawal and recall of all Irish pork products dating back to the 1st of September. It follows the discovery of a contaminant in pig feed by a dioxin known as PCB, at levels between 80 and 200 times the EU's recommended limit for dioxins. The discovery was made following a routine testing of pigs, which indicated the presence in the animal feed of PCBs, which were banned in the Republic of Ireland since the 1970s. The public have been advised to destroy all pork products purchased since September. It is estimated contaminated feed was used at a total of 47 farms. 9 of these were pork-producing farms. The remaining 38 were beef farms, with one of those also producing pork products. But the Food Safety Authority of Ireland has advised that it is not necessary at this time to have similar withdrawal of beef products. It is estimated pork supplies to 23 countries have been affected. Thousands of jobs are under threat at pig processing plants across the country as processors refuse to resume slaughter of pigs until they receive financial compensation. It is suspected that the oil that contaminated the offending pig feed with dioxins came from County Tyrone.
What exactly was the pork crisis, Jerry?
It was basically an in-feed contaminant, the dioxin scare, as it was called, you know, and as was an overview of it was that was the contamination of the in-product. And, you know, as in any industry, the consumer who's the in-product user is very important. So the scare that the product wouldn't be safe to eat was very significant.
It was a massive recall.
Massive recall, yeah. And I think the recall kind of might have highlighted issues with traceability. The amount that had to be recalled, you know, there would be pretty strict traceability measures in place for food products. And I suppose the amount that had to be recalled might have been a reflection of how the traceability system was working.
On the 18th of December 2008, it was disclosed that the beef samples from the affected farms had dioxin levels between 100 and 400 times the legal limit. Irish authorities insisted that the threat to public health from Irish beef products were insignificant, even though the dioxin levels were higher than in the affected pork. On the 25th of January 2009, Chinese quarantine authorities seized over 23 tonnes of frozen and contaminated Irish pork, which was imported by a company back in October 2008. Some reports suggest that the recovery of the Irish pork market will take up to a decade.
It's like all things. The science is so good now. So what has happened is the technology for detecting the presence of things is way higher than it ever was in the past. Through industrial processes of production and the use of different things, different minor levels can exist. Hindsight is a great thing. They did a total recall and a huge destruction. I'd say probably it was an overreaction. I think they'd have to eat about 5,000 tons of pork sausages before there'd be any chance that anything had happened to you. Nobody was going to do that. So the reality is the risk was minuscule. There was sloppy techniques used by the one person who supplied this feed. I'm saying at some areas our supervision is not as good as it should be.
The latest incident to shake the nation was only last year. In January 2013, the Food Safety Authority of Ireland informed the public that horse meat had been found in frozen beef burgers. Initial inquiries put the spotlight on three processing plants, two in Ireland and one in the UK.
In Ireland and England, people don't eat much horses. In the continent, a lot of horse meat is eaten. But when it started, everyone started pointing the finger at Ireland. Then suddenly they got around to a bit of testing.
But it soon became evident that the problem was not confined to Ireland and Britain alone, but that most countries in Europe had become involved. This led to a large range of foodstuffs being removed from supermarket shelves.
What happened during the height of that, people stopped buying the real cheap because they said, can we trust them? So there was a huge reduction in the amount of frozen burgers and frozen meal that were purchased across Europe. But most of it was replaced, and there was a bit of a switch to pork, chicken and other areas where people were looking for the cheaper product.
As a result, the government is to establish a central equine database in the wake of the scandal.
Horses must be registered, and there has been, what has happened, a fair bit around Cork. There's been a lot of stray horses rounded up and destroyed.
Minister for Agriculture Simon Coveney said the details of over 70% of equine animals registered since January 1st, 1980 would be recorded. These details will be held in the Animal Identification and Movement System.
One of the big effects of the horse meat scandal there was that it brought the quality assurance and the traceabilities into sharper focus. It wasn't a problem that was caused by individual farmers, it was caused by industry and lack of controls and supervision. And this isn't the first time this has happened. Do you know that a lot of farmers have suffered because of failures to control the thing at the industry level rather than the individual farmer. I strongly believe that, you know, we're concentrating our efforts on controls at individual farmers' levels, where there's much more need for individual controls at the industry level.
Like all things, a food scare is bad. You sell on your image. If you're buying a car, you like to think it's reliable, that won't let you down going out the gate. So from that point of view, your reputation is all important, and can I do business with them? We did a little level of damage, but lucky enough that we didn't do more damage.
Record keeping has become hugely important on farming. The main sanction that's on people is the single farm payment, penalties on that. Now, the single farm payment is very important to the individual farmer, but it's also hugely important to the community.
Farmers support many ancillary bodies, reinforcing that agriculture is the key to keeping rural communities alive.
Minister for Agriculture Coveney was speaking to a young farmers group in UCC, and I went in to see him, and I told him that any farmer that could meet all the cross compliance regulations on a routine basis would want the gold medal, and I said would want to be an Olympic one at that.
These events and many more have played their part in the remarkable change in the way we farm today. But as Thomas Jefferson said, every generation needs a new revolution. Join me in episode 3 when I look at the advances in animal health, husbandry, science and technology. In the Elfless Time was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with a television licence fee. Presented and produced by Marita Kelly and edited by Sean Healy. A Community Radio Yall production.